Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Captain's Log, Stardate 45076.3. I read about the achievements of the ancient Bajoran civilization in my 5th grade reader. They were architects and artists, builders and philosophers, when humans were not yet standing erect. Now I see how history has rewarded them. Welcome back, dear listeners, to another Hit or Miss Star Trek Mission Report. I am your host, Captain Michael Wilson, once again in the captain's chair leading this voyage. And joining me on this away mission are two returning guests, who need little in the way of introduction, but I'm going to give them one anyway. First up, it's our frequent collaborator and friend, though it has been a hot minute, the ever insightful and funkily named Jordan LaForden. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. I'm so excited to be here again.
Awesome. Yeah, it's good to hear from you again for the first time in like a little while, but it's always good to get your insights on some of these episodes. You ready to talk about Ensign Row, among other things?
Absolutely. I consider myself a Bajoran if I had to be a species from Star Trek, so very excited.
I would have assumed it would be a Discovery species of some kind, maybe Kelpian, but I guess...
I'm not tall enough for that.
None of us are. And we can't walk in those platform heels.
It just takes some practice.
Yeah, maybe not. And, we're also joined by an actor, film fan, occasional editor, and all-round bon vivant, the always articulate Rune. Welcome back.
Hello, thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Awesome, happy to be talking Trek. I know you've done Doctor Who podcasts, and I think you did one of the Trek countdowns or some kind or something, and obviously lots of silver screen podcasts either on your own or with your partner. So
I edited your countdown.
That's right, you weren't on it, but you did edit it. That's right.
My hands were on it indeed.
Very grateful we were as well.
That was fun.
Your little inserted Commander Riker number one joke that became the editing runner was pretty nice.
Yeah. What happens when you give me leeway?
Yeah, always appreciated. But, today we are continuing our exploration for this series of Cardassian and Bajoran storylines, and we're also kicking off what you could call a loose and very sporadically placed Ruularan trilogy. It's not going to be back-to-back episodes, but all three of them will be there by the end of the series. Naturally, we'll be starting at the beginning, which is a memorable introduction in the Next Generation Season 5 episode, Ensign Row, a pivotal episode that not only brings in one of Trek's most compelling recurring characters, but also introduced the entire Bajoran people to the franchise. But before we dive into the politics, the prickly crew attitudes, and the bad moral with the moral compass of a malfunctioning tricorder, as usual, we'll be dropping into our legendary and titular hit or miss segment later on. But first, we'll get things officially underway, as always, by opening comms in the segment that we call Hailing Frequencies.
Hailing Frequencies open, sir.
So this would be normally where we would ask you your Trek favourites and things. I know I've definitely done that with you, Jordan, but correct me if I'm wrong, Rune, we've never actually had this kind of Trek interrogation with you where we've asked about your favourite things, or have we?
I have not had a Cardassian interrogation with you yet, no.
Well, I'll ask you how many lights there are later, but in the meantime, I have questions I like to ask all the guests to kind of get to know their Trek history, and we've kind of, yeah, we've brushed past it with you, so the time has come. We can't put it off any longer.
All right.
So the first question I have for you is, do you remember what it was that first got you into Star Trek, maybe the first episode you ever saw or the first thing that you watched and grabbed you and thought, oh, well, I'd like to watch more of this?
So Trek was a requirement in my household growing up, so I have no memory of what my original was. I just know I was raised on Kirk and Spock, and then when TNG started, because I am that old, I really latched onto TNG, so it is like my OG, like, home show, I guess. Like, yeah, my comfort characters are all there. But yeah, it has always been an element of my life.
That's fair enough. Yeah, yeah. I think I have a similar story, and I've heard a couple of people say the same thing, that their parents watched the original and they kind of did, but then Next Generation became their series, and that's what they kind of watched on.
I remember like putting on Star Trek plays when I was itty bitty, so
you can tell you were destined for showbiz then.
yeah it was really obvious in many painful ways. Yeah,
that's awesome though. Can you remember a specific Next Gen episode, or did you watch it from the start? Were you there from the pilot?
From the pilot.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. All right, then. That's cool.
I watched it obsessively in high school, though, I think, as a way to disassociate from the terrors of high school.
Oh, good God, yes.
Yeah. I was very much a loner kid, very soft-spoken, very shy, you know, weird. I grew up in.
I've told this story before, but when I was in high school, it was when Voyager was first airing, and they became like very much a second family to me.
Voyager came on when I was in high school too, and so I would come home from school and watch TNG on like the afternoon reruns, and then we would do a Saturday night every night with some friends of ours when Voyager was dropping its new episodes.
Nice.
Yeah, we would dinner and watch us. It was very nerdy. Wow.
We're all nerds here. Don't worry about that.
So nerdy. I feel like I was at the frontier part of being a nerd or something like that. My dad certainly was. But yeah, so Voyager is definitely close to my heart too.
Me and my best friend had like memes before memes were a thing, where we just used to have random Star Trek quotes we'd latch onto and quote to each other. The amount of times we cried out in the middle of the school playground and were like, "Don't come between me and the blood wine," or random things like that, just from an episode that we caught on. But anyway, so we're all geeks, as you can tell.
Absolutely.
So the next question would be, and this is quite a big one, I do apologize, to put you on the spot. If you had to pick three episodes, or if you prefer movies, to show somebody that you think represents the best of the Trek franchise, what would they be and why?
Oh, that's mean. The best of the Trek Enterprise or franchise?
It doesn't necessarily have to be best, just what you think would best represent if you were trying to get somebody into Star Trek. Is like, okay, this, I think, if they don't like these, they're not going to like anything, kind of thing.
Right, okay. I feel like all the new stuff is so relatable now for people, like Discovery and things like that. Like, I would definitely start somebody from the beginning, like, in the newer stuff before being like, no, let's watch James T. Kirk in his original flesh.
I don't know. There's a couple of really big TOS episodes that I definitely would love for people to try and see.
I feel like you have to watch it, definitely. Mm. And it's got its, there's definitely value to watching it, but I don't know that I would start somebody off with that.
Okay, fair enough. So which episodes or as I said, movies would you go with? Can you remember the names of them first?
No, God, there's so many. I'm not just invested. Let's go with if I was going to start somebody off, I would start with one of the films. And y'all are gonna hate me for this. First Contact, I think, is like my favorite.
That's perfect. I wouldn't hate you for that.
Okay.
Which is fantastic, yeah. Okay. I think you'd probably have to start them with Best of Both Worlds first, otherwise they're not going to get the context, but otherwise.
Maybe, but yeah. I don't know. I really like the Borg as an enemy. It's just...
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
No, yeah. First Contact's fine. I mean, We did have a guest the other week say Wrath of Khan, and we had Lady Vian say that her favorite Trek movie was Generations, which was a first, very definitely.
Wow. Even when I was like, what, 16 or something, when Generations came out, 14 something, I went to that film with my parents in the theater, and I was like, they rushed this.
This isn't as good as the show, is it really?
Right. Yeah. Like, this was a little fast, guys. We should have taken some more time.
Yeah, I still like a lot of it, but it's definitely not not a great one. Anyway, so First Contact and a couple of episodes, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, a little smattering of episodes from every genre, I guess.
Let's just say one TOS and one Discovery for argument's sake. That's fair enough. As I said, not everyone can name every episode of the 1,000-odd. So, do you have, this is, again, quite a big question, but do you have three favorite characters that really speak to you or represent you in the Trek universe?
Data.
Fair enough.
I can't think. Detmer?
Oh, wow. Okay. Yes. That's an unusual choice, but okay, cool.
Well, what a wonderful choice.
Right? I think she has such a great backstory that I think that could be like this own spinoff, honestly. But also, I wear my hair like Detmer does. So when I shave it down really, 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 I'm like, give me the Detmer shave. So
I have the same thing.
Right? I feel like it's a soul.
But you were going to say that you wear like an artificial implant.
If I could, I would.
Above my right eye.
It's just like I love seeing people with like the wild haircuts going on. So yeah, no, Detmer was always amazing. I loved her. And let me see, Spock.
Oh, awesome choice! Fantastic. Yeah. Always like anyone that loves Spock, because I'm a huge Spock fan.
Oh yeah, always have been. Like always have been.
Yeah, and I don't think they've done a bad casting out of all three of the attempts they've done. They've all been good. Yeah. So.
I think I just picked all of the like autistic coded characters too.
That's usually what I do. Oh, I said that. I actually picked. I've said this before, but I actually went with Spock, Picard, and Saru, which I don't know what that says about me.
Yeah,
there's so many great ones. It's really. Yeah.
I don't know what that says about me, that I have trouble fitting in. I'm a bit of a coward and I'd rather talk through problems than fight. I don't know.
Nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. So, the big question, well, there's two more, but the big question, first of all, what's your favorite series out of the many that there now are?
Let's see. I think I would always... go, like if I had to pick one and that was the only one I would ever watch ever again, I would pick TNG, I think.
Yes.
Yay. Yeah.
That's good. We're getting some more TNGs, and I was sick of hearing Deep Space Nine when I used to ask this question. So and I'm always TNG. I'm team TNG and Voyager myself.
TNG and Voyager definitely is like, I don't know, just feels like my core.
Yeah, awesome. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Well, for the next question, we'll bring you back in, Jordan, because you've been quite nice and sat quite peacefully. Uh-huh. So this question is, as I said, this series we're looking at Bajoran and Cardassian episodes, because they're kind of intertwined. Is there any episodes, storylines, characters that would fit that theme that you want to shout out as being particular favorites?
Wait, what?
So anything to do with the Bajorans and Cardassians, do you have a favorite like episode or storyline or like I said characters or anything to do with them
other than
what we're going to talk about, obviously.
I've always loved Ensign Ro. That's why I was so gung-ho about doing this, and like she's been a favorite from the moment she stepped on the screen for me.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And what about you, Jordan?
Well, I have to give a shout out to President Rillick.
Yay!
From Discovery,
who I think is Cardassian and Bajoran and human,
Cardassian, Bajoran, and human, and my favorite cosplay I've ever done. So, not to shout out myself, but love her. And then I love the DS9 episode Duet. I think that is a really
you just
powerful...
reviewed it.
Oh yeah, it's a very powerful episode, especially watching Ensign Ro. The episode Ensign Ro, with that episode in mind, I think is really, really powerful.
Mm. Oh, we'll get into that. It's amazing to me that Ensign Row, in a way I've never really realized, is basically a de facto DS9 pilot.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of the big lead into that. But anyway, we'll get there, as I said, later on. So, yeah, okay. I mean, there's lots to choose from, but those are good choices, I would think, to scratch the surface of them. So, yeah, if you guys are happy, then we'll move on to the next section after this. Okay. So we'll leave that behind and we'll jump into the section that gives the podcast its name, the hit or miss section.
What about my performance?
I'm not a drama critic.
And as I said, Jordan, I know you've done this before, you know what to expect, but for the benefit of Rune and any listeners who aren't aware, the hit or miss section is where I just pick anything from the Star Trek universe, put a picture up on screen and tell you about it and ask if you think it's a hit or a miss, debate back and forth, come up with a consensus if we can. And we'll usually do like 4, maybe 5 at a push. There'll be some of them that will be to do with the ongoing theme, so they might be Cardassian or Bajoran themed, but not necessarily all, because that would get boring. And yeah, this season, to mix things up a little bit more, I've also decided to do it as a kind of a bit of a lottery type situation. So I have 9 things here, and I'm going to ask you guys for numbers so that there's an even more sort of hint for randomness to see what you're going to pick out of the things here. So
you just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
To ease Rude in, because you've done this before, Jordan, I'll start with you.
Okay,
if you
no
want to pick a number, but if you want to pick a number between 1 and 9, and we'll see what that corresponds to, and then ask the question.
I pick number 2.
Oh, number 2 is actually, well, that's been waiting around for ages to be picked, and it is connected quite heavily. It's a ship, because you know me, I love ships, and I always do ship things. Hit or miss for the Cardassian Galo class warship. And again, you picked the number, so Jordan, you can go first. Hit or miss for that.
Oh, you know I'm not a ship girl. I think it's a hit. Mm-hmm. I like the shape. It feels very, I was going to say it feels reptilian to me. It feels more like amphibious to me, but close enough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it would fit. It fits the Cardassian culture. It's powerful, which is cool. I thought, and especially DS9, they did a great job of like, I don't know, the effects were good for that time period.
Definitely.
I'm going to say it's a hit.
Thank you for that. I appreciate you doing that as a non-ship person. I appreciate you giving me more than just, I don't know. It's a ship.
Yeah, I mean, I like relationships, but I'm not a ship girl.
A shipper, not a ship fan.
Exactly. Other than the NX-01, that's my ship through and through. But this ship is great.
I have to remember that. Cool. So, over to you then, Rude. Are you a ship person, or are you just not bothered either way? And what do you think of this
one? I'm not bothered by ships, but this is a miss for me.
Oh, what makes you say that?
It looks like a sperm.
Yes, really? Rune. I love
it. Did like immediately when the picture came up, this overhead view of it, I was like, no, thank you.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, all right. not really much I could add to that, or I just want to wade into that, to be perfectly honest.
Given that, I'm very curious if it's a hit or miss for you, Mike.
I'm going to say hit, not for that reason. I've kind of put my planted my flag with this in the past. I really like, one of the things I dig about it is that from a top-down view, what it does look like is it's the Cardassian symbol of their species. And it's the only kind of species I know that does that invents their ships to look like their symbol. And it would be the equivalent of like, well, yes, that's unfortunate, but it would be the equivalent of like if Starfleet had a ship that was just a big flying Delta. It would be kind of cool. Yeah. So I do kind of like it. I like the kind of coloring and everything. And yes, it looks kind of amphibious. It's got almost a horseshoe crabish kind of quality to it.
I was thinking like stingray, which isn't an amphibian,
Yeah. But I don't know why it just kind of works when you see it in context in big fleets or fighting against other things. Individually, it's not particularly anything special, but it works for me anyway. So I would say not a huge hit, but a soft enough hit, and that would break the tie at least. So, so yeah, hit or miss for the Cardassian sperm class. Anyway.
Oh, Gene Roddenberry is rolling over in his grave.
You don't know Gene very well. He'd be the first to be like, yep, and I did it on purpose. But anyway. So that's knocked out the Cardassian ship. So, yeah, Rude, over to you. Do you want to pick a number between 1 and 9, except number 2, which is already gone?
3, because it's like a favorite number.
Oh, okay. So number 3 is an episode. It's a two-part episode of DS9. If you need reminding about it, do just ask, because it's kind of hard to just get a grip on it from just one picture. But it is the episode, The Maquis, Parts 1 and 2. And would you find that a hit or a miss? And do you remember it, first of all?
Don't have a memory of this. This is DS9, you said?
Yeah, it's basically the introduction of the Maquis, because it's in season 2 of DS9, so it's very early on.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go with hit, because I love the Maquis.
Okay, well.
When I was 14, I wrote an entire script about the Maquis for Voyager. Really?
Oh, I want to see that now.
No. What was wild was I created a name in that script for a game that they were playing, and within that season, they used that name for a scene that they encountered. I was like, what?
That's crazy.
So I feel like I was definitely in the vibe, in the realm.
Somebody's watching you. The government are monitoring our calls, and they're just using it to feed Paramount script ideas.
I didn't even have internet or anything, man.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. It was probably, what, 94? I don't think any of us
would have come to think of it.
But, you know, the government.
Real. I wish they'd do that now, because I have seen some Ash Tyler scripts that I need to see on screen. So.
There we go. We know. We've all been to AO3. And
I was going to say, if you read my fanfic, you know.
So, over to you then, Jordan. Do you recall the Maquis part 1 and 2 quite well? And what would you think of it?
I recall it okay. I would say it's a hit for me, mostly in the Cisco Cal Hudson tension. I found that really compelling. I would say it's a hit. I don't remember a lot of details from the episode other than that relationship. Being really compelling. I thought it was well written. I thought that relationship was well written and well acted, of course.
I almost feel bad, and it's academic saying it anyway, but I would have said miss for this, just because I really didn't like it when DS9 started being anti-Trek and very ironically kind of anti-Gene Roddenberry, as you were kind of just hinting at, like, oh, he'd be rolling in his grave. And this episode, I remember really resenting a speech that everybody else loves, which is Sisko being like, well, Earth's the problem because Earth is a paradise and it's easy to be a saint in paradise and we need to look out. And I'm like, I don't want to know how flawed my utopia is. I'm not here for that. And it is, I like it when they, you know, when they dive into it in certain episodes and they kind of do explore and ask these questions, but I didn't need it to be outright like, oh, well, it turns out we're just jerks. You know, and yeah, I think for me it was the start of a lot of that, which is why I've never really loved the Maquis just as an example of that. It's kind of, they're intriguing, but I don't love it when they are outright like, you are the bad guys, because, you know, not everything has to be black and white like that. Right. Although I do wish they'd kind of done more with the kind of conflict on Voyager, because that became muted way too quickly. That's not related to this episode. It's just...
That's what my episode was about that I wrote.
Really?
It was about the Maquis and then the Federation on the Voyager and how that was working.
I wish you'd actually had a chance to get that submitted to Paramount, because, like I said, we really needed more of that. They didn't do nearly enough with it. Yeah. There was that one episode where it's like the holodeck simulation that Tuvok had invented. Like, what if the Maquis did decide to take over? But
yeah.
I'd have liked to see a bit more of that. But in terms of the Maquis in general, like I said, I didn't love the idea of them because I just think they were almost used to be a kind of like, oh, to point out how much of a dick the Federation is really for me. And I'm like, nah. Similar issues I have with Section 31 in that it's just like, I don't, stop showing me how flawed everything is. But anyway, that is completely a me problem, and I know a lot of people that wouldn't have that issue. And like I said, there's other things in the episode. Like I said, the actor that plays Cal Hudson is great, and there's some great moments, but I don't know. I just didn't really respond to it myself. So, but it doesn't matter because you guys both said hit, so it's going to be considered a hit overall anyway. So we are back to you then, Jordan. Number between 1 and 9, except 2 or 3.
Let's go with 8.
Wow. Oh, well, 8 is another ship, so this is going to be boring.
No!
Because you don't like ships.
It's fine. I can give opinions on ships.
Right? Okay, we can all we want.
Well, I do have an image to put up so that you can kind of judge, at least aesthetically, but it's a very new ship from Star Trek Picard. Hit or miss for the SS Elios 12. Jordan, you go for it.
I don't love it. I'm going to say it's a miss.
Okay.
Specifically because the NX-01 did it better, and this looks like it's trying to be the NX-01 in some ways.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like the lines. It doesn't look clean and classy like a lot of the ships I do like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like, Yeah, I feel like I've seen it before, but done better. So I'm going to say it's a miss.
Okay, fair enough. I'll jump in next just to vary it a bit, and I will actually agree with everything you said, and I'm glad you said it, because I actually agree. I don't particularly like this at all. It's clearly, it doesn't want to be fully Starfleet, so it's trying to dial it back, but as you said, it just ends up not doing anything particularly good. So it just kind of looks very half-assed. The nacelles feel like an afterthought, just shoved on the top. It's got an almost NX-01-ish thing to the back of it, but even that's just a bar. And like I said, the lines of it, just something about it just doesn't sit right. It just feels like something and nothing almost. So never been. I know some people that are a huge fan. I know one particular friend of mine who's a huge Dr. Crusher fan who loves this ship just because it was Crusher's ship at the start of Picard. But yeah, it was a miss for me as well, I'm afraid. So Rune, over to you.
Also a miss.
Okay. Wow, okay.
Yeah. I mean, like, you can immediately look at it and be like, okay, that's obviously Federation. But, like, I don't know. It's just clunky in, like, a way that you wouldn't expect at that particular.
Yeah. Time. Yeah. I think it's because it's supposed to be Federation, but not Starfleet. So maybe it's meant to be kind of older and a bit rubbish. That just makes it look.
Maybe. Yeah.
Meh. I do like that because it's a medical thing, they have to have a huge blue stripe across just to point that out. You know? Right. We're blue, we're medical.
Right.
But I blame Lower Decks for that and their funky, you know, painted stripes of various colors. But yeah, no. Okay, well, that's fair enough. That's a miss for that ship. I can't complain because I agreed. So, you know. So, Rune, we are back to you if you'd like to pick another number between 1 and 9 other than 2, 3, or 8.
9
is another episode, and one that I know Jordan will definitely have opinions on, and I'm hoping you remember it and have seen it. So hit or miss for the Star Trek Discovery Season 5 premiere, Red Directive.
Ooh.
Rune, do you recall this episode, or do I have to jog your memory?
Jog my memory just because, but I have definitely seen it and I remember the title.
So, but yeah, it was the very start of Season 5. So it's the start of the Red Directive mission they get sent on, where it's all about, you know, finding the people from back in Next Gen, the sort of people that seeded all life, and
yeah,
finding the kind of various items they get sent off on the first of their scavenger hunts. They're assigned, I can't remember the name of the Captain Rayner, to kind of join the quest, and yeah, there's a motorcycle chase on the sand, and both ships end up having to come down and erect force fields. They chase after Locke and Moll, who are introduced, and that whole thing.
And Fred, we meet Fred.
And Fred, the kind of data-esque android.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, you know, honestly, we always love a Mad Max motorcycle chase. So
this is the second Mad Max reference I've heard today.
Oh shit.
What is going on?
Wow.
I'm so curious what the other one was. Was it something personal or is it something you can share?
This is weird. Okay. So I'm part of this Buy Nothing group on Facebook.
Yeah.
And so I was picking something up that someone was giving away. And they were like, we like chatted for a little bit. And then they were like, hey, you should come to this like event that I'm going to where everyone like dresses up like they're from Mad Max. And like, they like showed me part of their costume. And I was like, I'm just here to like pick up a monitor. Like, can I go? I mean, it sounds like a cool party, but I've like literally never met this person in my life. So I'm not.
Right. That's so wild.
And like, if I'm going to cosplay something, I guess if I could cosplay Michael Burnham here, it would fit the aesthetic. But like, I'm a Trek cosplayer, not a Mad Max cosplayer. So.
Right.
Sounds like they were just giving something away because they wanted an excuse to just drag strangers into cosplay.
I mean, they were very chatty. Anyway, sorry, Rune. We're talking about Mad Max.
I'm going to go with a hit for this episode. I honestly don't remember anything being bad about anything in Discovery. So.
Oh, good.
Yeah, no, it was a delight from beginning to end for me. But yeah, no, we'll go with a hit for this one. I enjoyed the what was it? LOL characters too. What's his name?
Mock and Maldi.
I enjoyed that little duo right there.
Yeah, they were good. Honestly,
they really were.
Very surprising when they revealed that he was a Breen and got into all that later in the season. Spoilers if you haven't seen season 5, but it's like 3 years old now. I mean, I'm glad you picked this because, Jordan, you're literally the reason I put a Discovery episode amongst the 9 choices. So I have to have your thoughts. Of course.
This is a hit for me. Okay. I think it was a great kickoff to the mystery. I liked meeting Rainer and the tension. Mm. I will say I did not like that Book and Burnham were not together, but that wouldn't, like, it didn't take away from the episode for me. It just, I want them together and they deserve all the happiness in the world.
They did get back together.
Which they got, but I was hoping in season 5, we'd actually get to see them be happy, not like, tense and are we are we not? Oh no, we're broken up, but we have to work.
You saw how we left them at the end of season 4. You kind of had to come to expect that they'd be separated.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
I don't care. I don't care. anyway, so, but no, I thought, I thought that the chase scene was cool. It was cool seeing Fred. Locke and Maul's introduction was great. I know that they didn't know that season 5 was their last season when they wrote it and shot it, but it was a great, I don't know, kickoff to a season that felt like a good last season for them, though I wish they'd had a couple more episodes to wrap things up. I really like this episode. I got to go to the season 5 premiere in New York.
Oh, wow.
And watch it in a movie theater full of Star Trek fans with Sonequa Martin-Green and Wilson Cruz, which is really cool. So seeing this episode on the big screen, that's the best way to see it.
Effects are awesome. I bet that sort of, the opening chase where it opens with her, never a dull moment on the whole of the ship and stuff would have looked so cool.
Because we've already seen that in like the teasers and stuff. The
previews,
but seeing it on the big screen was phenomenal.
I bet. Oh man, awesome. And I did love, even though it's a, you know, CGI kitbash, I kind of did love Rainer's ship. Because you know, I was going to mention the ship.
Right.
So, and even though it makes absolutely no logical sense, I still love the moment when both ships just crashed into the sand and erected shields to kind of create a force field. Like, it's nonsensical, but who cares? It looks cool.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I do love the concept of a red directive as well.
Yeah, definitely.
It makes sense in Starfleet.
Yes.
Yeah, so love the concept of the Red Directive. Love that we get some more Kovich in this episode, and he's like on the bridge while things are getting wily, and is kind of nervous about it, which is fun. So yeah, great episode through and through.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really say anything you guys haven't already said. I would have said hate, and it's going to sound just repetitive, but yes, I loved the introduction of Locke and Maul. Lila loved the introduction of Rayner, even though I didn't like him at first, because you're not supposed to, and then warm to him as the show went on. So watching it back now, I kind of appreciate it. Retrospectively, I love all the action stuff I already mentioned, the ship chase, the kind of Mad Max bike thing, as I said. It was cool seeing another Data type android, the Fred character. And like you, it's weird that they kind of didn't know season 5 was the last, because the plot is very full circle, kind of going back to a Next Gen episode, and it's a big sort of quest, you know, the people that created life, or so they think. So yeah, it felt very much like they could have been, you know, an intended plot line for our last season, and this was the start of all that. And as you said, making that a Red Directive, and just little moments. I love the kind of them all kind of being at the Starfleet headquarters at the start, and the reopening of the academy and everything, and seeing Tilly again, things like
seeing
that.
Drunk Tilly getting flirted with and not realizing it.
Absolutely. Oh, I love her. I really hope we get to see a lot more of her in the Starfleet Academy show, or at least some great scenes. So, yeah, I mean, that's unanimous hit after a unanimous miss. So there we go. That'll conclude the hit or miss. I think we'll leave that there before we move on to the main episode review. We've done 4, so that's fine. So, see, that wasn't too painful and harmful, was it?
That was perfect. I enjoyed that, actually.
Awesome. That's cool. Well, as I said... With that out of the way, we'll jump into the main bulk of the episode, which is the main episode review, and we are going to begin our analysis.
A spark analysis
of that episode. And as I mentioned, that episode this week is Ensign Row, the episode title, not the character, although it is based on that, obviously. So, yeah, before we jump in then, I do have this thing that I've been doing. I don't know why. I stole the idea from the Delta Flyers, as I always say, where I do little bits of poetry for every episode now, a limerick and a haiku. So if you'll indulge me, I'm going to read them out. I used to separate them, but then I always forget to do the other one by the end of the episode. So I'm just going to read them both together because it's easier that way. But yeah, I feel like it's always fun when I hear the others do it. So hopefully somebody gets something out of me doing this. And it's a good introduction to the episode and maybe jogs some memories of people that aren't as familiar or haven't seen it in a while. So I will ask, which would you guys prefer to hear first then amongst yourselves? Not that it matters, I'll do both anyways.
what were the limerick?
Limerick and a haiku.
Oh, do the limerick first.
Okay, fair enough. So the limerick for Ensign Row is as follows. Admiral Kennelly has Row reassigned, but has ulterior motives in mind. Doing Cardassian dirty work while everyone's acting like a jerk. At least Guinan remembers how to be kind.
Nice.
Mike, that was great.
That was
thank good. You. Oh, thank you. Thank you. That one did take a little while or two. That one was I don't know why I was struggling to come up with something for this episode and then inspiration hit. So yeah, anyway, the haiku, slightly less impressive probably, but here we go. It is simply a secret mission, a scarred past, a trust is earned. Welcome, Ensign Row.
Oh, nice. Nice.
It sticks to the, you know, the syllables.
Yes. You did a great job.
Really, you did.
Awesome. Oh, thank you, guys. Thank you so much. And I appreciate that. So, yeah, before we jump into me giving behind-the-scenes stuff and start talking about the episode, I do always like to ask if you can remember the first time you saw this or any kind of initial impressions that stick in your mind. And Jordan, I'll come to you first and ask that question.
Yeah, I remember watching this episode as a kid. I feel like when I was growing up, season five reruns were always on. And so I feel like I got to see this episode a lot on like Spike TV or whatever was running the episodes at the time. I mean, I remember really liking it. And kind of at that time being like, an admiral is bad, doing things bad behind the scenes. Like, this is horrible. And now as an
what
adult,
is this, a
I
Tuesday?
I watch it and I'm like, oh, here's another badmiral. I remember really liking Ensign Row right off the bat. And I still really, really like her.
That's weird because I know a lot of people that write with this episode in particular, like struggling to like her at first.
And I mean, as a B'Elanna Torres super fan as a kid, this is, I love the like angry
Yes.
Angry woman who's super capable and is right in the end. I mean, and it's not exactly perfect, but like, yeah. So yeah, I really liked Ro right away. And I still do.
Anyway, speaking just of this episode, can you remember the first time you saw it, Rude, and what stuck in your mind specifically about it?
I cannot remember the first time I watched it. I assume I was a little kid at some point, probably the first time it ever came out. But no, I've liked Ensign Ro from the beginning. I vibrated with her, and okay. Yeah, so I wish I had more of her, but I have zero.
That's
memory.
Fine. Yeah. Is she a character that kind of appeals to you that you can maybe relate to in part, or just a character that you like?
Yeah, I have to agree with that whole like angry woman with a tragic past that's, you know, she can do whatever she wants and fuck everybody else, and she is right in the end. Mm-hmm. Like, just like Jordan said, yeah. Like I like that character arc.
Yeah, I think she's an angry woman, but I think by the end, very justifiably so. It's out of nowhere.
Absolutely, justifiably. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, aren't most angry women completely justified?
Yes, absolutely justifiably.
I mean, yes. I'm not going to say no.
No, you're not.
No, I think they're just too emotional, to be quite frank.
Wow.
Oh,
I would never say that.
I know.
We have all the historical proof we need that men are 100 times worse. I'm not going to elect a woman. She would be too emotional and stupid and do foolish things.
Right.
Anyway, moving swiftly along. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me that, and I'm sure you guys know this, it's pretty common knowledge that the intention was that Kira in DS9 was originally going to be Ro. That mm-hmm. was the intention, but Michelle Forbes didn't want to take on like a series regular role. And wow. It's incredible watching Ro's first episode here and then knowing, because I've seen Emissary fairly recently, how similar kind of first season Kira is to Ro, with that kind of angry chip on the shoulder, but so I've got good bloody reason, you know.
I just assumed it was Bajoran natural angst.
Well, I mean, it makes sense. They would both have suffered the same thing, Cardassian occupation, and, you know, they've both seen their probably parents get tortured and their planet being ransacked and whatever else. So, but it is incredible, like you said. I can definitely see why how they would have just plugged in Ensign Ro into that role, and at least in the first couple of seasons, it wouldn't have been all that different, you know. Mm-hmm. But I am glad we've gotten in our visitor. I think she's fantastic as Kira, so I'm not complaining about that. And Ro got her own arc, but yeah, again, seeing their first episodes, it's incredible. The similarities, but yeah, we'll get into the start of all of the Bajoran things anyway when we start to talk about that. But as I said, I always like to start with some little behind the scenes information, so forgive me if it's a little dry. I'll try and get to it quickly. I always say that, but if you do want to chime in and correct anything or add your commentary to anything, just feel free to shout out and interrupt. I won't mind. But so I'll start by saying that this episode features, as I said, the first appearance of the Bajorans, who went on to be a focal point of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. In the original story, it was actually the Romulans who were occupying Bajor, but Rick Berman felt that the Romulans had been seen too much and remembered the episode The Wounded, which was the first episode we reviewed this series, and had the occupiers changed to the Cardassians from that episode. Even though this episode proved an inspiration on the creation of the DS9 TV series, it was actually written at a time before that series was envisioned, which I was shocked about when I read, because I was like, this feels like it is set up for that show in so many ways, and it's so weird that that's just a coincidence. Mm-hmm. Berman emphasized the Bajorans were not modeled on any one real-life group. Quote, the Kurds, the Palestinians, the Jews in the 1940s, the boat people from Haiti, unfortunately the homeless and terrorism are problems in every age. Oh boy, yes. Unfortunately, we are still dealing with that, as that quote was made several decades ago. But let's not dwell too much on that, or we'll all be depressed. Anyway, this episode was created to introduce the new recurring character of Ro Laren. Won't surprise anyone to know that. The producers hoped to add another character who could create some conflict, and preferably a woman. Berman explained, the other characters in the cast are relatively homogenous, some might even say bland, so we wanted a character with the strength and dignity of a Starfleet officer, but with a troubled past and edge. Yeah, fair enough. I know that they had some issues because Gene Roddenberry had originally said, like, there'd be no interpersonal conflict with Starfleet because we're all above that, and kind of hard to make drama in that circumstance. So when he passed away, I know there was a lot of, like, quickly, let's have them all conflicting with each other. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine this episode would have been made under Gene's watch, probably, but still, very good.
Yeah.
where are we then? Yeah, Michelle Forbes was offered the part of Ro Laren because the producers were impressed by her performance as Dara in the earlier episode Half a Life, which I always forget she did, but she was in that episode as a guest star before appearing as Ro. Anyone else remember that? Or is it just...
Is that the Loxana Troy episode?
It is, with the chap who has to die because he's turning like 60. So
yeah, she plays his daughter. Yeah, I remember she that. Does.
Yep, that's the one. And again, she was impressive. It's just that I keep forgetting that she had another role before Ro, and it wasn't like the makeup was that heavy. She wasn't exactly unrecognizable, and she was good. But anyway, moving on. This episode features the first appearance of Mott, the Bolian barber. He next appeared in Schisms. He's very annoying, I have to say, in this episode.
But he's the best barber in Starfleet.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? Exactly. The name Bajora, at times used here to indicate both the Bajoran race and their terrorist group, is never heard after this episode in Next Gen DS9 or Voyager, but it is visible on a computer readout in the episode Conundrum. Later episodes of DS9 established named terrorist groups on Bajor, including the Konmar and the Circle. Yeah, that kind of stuck out like a sore thumb. Anytime the word Bajora was mentioned, I was like, oof,
yeah.
We haven't quite realized that's not what we're going with yet. This is super geeky, but, you know, we're all Trek fans. That's what we're here for. The exact length of the Cardassian occupation is also open to interpretation. The consensus is that it lasted for 50 years. Some references, including a mention in the episode Ensign Ro, give the figure as 40 years prior to that becoming untenable, while others have said 50, even 60 in the episode Emissary. According to Gul Dukat in Waltz, the occupation had lasted 40 years prior to his arrival, at which point the occupation was in a state of chaos. Most fans interpret Dukat's approximately 10-year tenure as prefect to mean that the occupation lasted 50 years total, while other references either interpreted to refer to the quagmire Dukat inherited or disregarded as continuity errors. One could also argue that it lasted longer than 50 years, as the Cardassians maintained a military presence on Bajor prior to the formal annexation of the planet. So, we all care so much about this. Exactly how many years were they there? We need to know.
Right. Yeah,
it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things, but somebody, some continuity advisor probably got fired for not keeping an exact track of that. I suppose it matters. Metaphorically, they still represent the same thing. It's all Nazi occupation and stuff like that, really, isn't it? So, yeah. We'll move on to the various subjects. As if you are new here, we break it down into little sections like writing and plot, acting, directing, if there's anything, bits and pieces like that. We'll hit them as we go, but if the conversation drifts a certain way, we certainly don't stop it and, you know, bring it back. We're happy to just keep go with the flow. So I'm going to start by asking if there's anything that you guys wanted to mention that stands out about the writing. And Rune, I'll ask you first. Anything that stands out particularly or that you can remember as being a huge thing? I know you haven't recently watched the episode, so it's not as fresh, but...
I watched it this morning, thank you.
Did you? Oh, wow, I appreciate that, because I only just told you what it was like 2 hours ago. I was like, yeah, they're not going to have watched it in time.
I sat down and watched it immediately.
Wow, thank you.
You're welcome. I do my homework mostly. Don't tell my vocal coach.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Not though. he would disagree. So I thought the writing was very well done. I really love the way Guinan comes in and just like takes over the situation with Ro and is immediately like, she's my friend. And you know, the Guinan and Picard relationship is always so like unique too. But yeah, no, I enjoyed the writing for this one. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that the Guinan thing is a standout in this episode.
Yeah.
I love how kind of pithy they make her, and it just immediately hits to you when she says something like, oh, I never stay long enough to make friends. Too late.
And the weight that carries with Picard was nice.
Oh, completely, yeah. Because, I mean, we know the depth of their relationship and everything. And we all love Picard. I mean, or at least I do.
No, 100%. You know. Who doesn't?
Exactly. So, what about you, Jordan? What stood out in the writing for you particularly?
I mean, I also loved Guinan. That was a big standout for me. And one that I kind of forget about when I remember this episode, I forget Guinan's, just kind of her importance in it. But it also, of course, makes me think of, I think it's called Rascals, when Guinan and Ro and Picard and, oh no, who's the other one?
O'Brien. It's Keiko, sorry, not O'Brien.
Yeah. Well, you didn't say which O'Brien, so you were right. Yeah, that's what I meant. When they all become children again. And just Guinan and Ro and their friendship as children as well.
I love that episode so much.
So just like thinking about that episode in light of this, it was just so really good. Fun.
Because Ro never had a childhood, and so Guinan's teaching her how to be a kid. And
those kids were amazing.
Yeah, they were so good.
They were so good at like developing those characters. What?
I wish we'd really done that.
My number one dad.
He's my number one dad. Number one.
We're not talking about that episode. Sorry. I forget Guinan's importance in this episode, and it was really fun to see. Whoopi Goldberg does an amazing job. Other than that, you know, the plot does feel not predictable, but very like kind of formulaic TNG. Which isn't bad. And part of me wonders if like I would have thought that if I watched it the first time, you know. But having seen TNG, DS9, you know, all of these so many times, it did feel a little formulaic, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. They did put a different spin on it. The end is fun, you know, with, I don't know if fun's the right word, but just like Picard kind of outsmarting.
Yes, exactly.
People is fun. So I like that. I like that twist.
I'd agree with that. I wonder if I was just a little slow on the uptake then, because I didn't think it was a typical next gen in that it kind of, the twists and turns kind of took me by surprise. I would have been surprised when they happened, and even rewatching, I was like, oh yeah, of course, I remember that they tricked them with this and that, and kind of it's hard to explain without fully just recapping the episode, but the way it's kind of a bluff and a double bluff, and you know what I'm getting at if you've seen it, obviously. So but yeah, I really appreciate it, and like you, I fully agree with you. I think it is, it's a punch in the air moment where it's like, well, the ship's been destroyed, oh no, how many casualties? None. Oh crap, there was nobody on board, you know. Oh, all right, clever. So yeah, I appreciated that, but I forgot to mention basically my first impressions of the episode, so I'll do that before I get into the couple of little facts I have on the writing. I couldn't really remember that much about this, because chances are when I first saw it I would have been really young, and I probably, the political stuff either would have bored me or just went way over my head, or probably both, so I wasn't really kind of tuned into that. But I did remember bits and pieces of it, like I remembered the Enterprise crew acting like dicks basically, and being real jerks to Rowan, being like, what is this thing she's done where they're being so bloody unfair, in particular Riker, and I fully remember that whole like take off your earring kind of thing, because so stupid. And I've said it before and I'll say it again, if I was Ensign Ro, the first thing I'd do is march him to the bridge and be like, see that Klingon over there with the baldric on, see your girlfriend there who's not wearing a uniform, tell me again I can't wear the earring. He got away with it, he's the first officer, he's the number one, so. But yeah, never appreciated any of that. And then just even Geordi, very out of character, like you know, behind her back in tenfold, like, oh, she doesn't deserve to wear the uniform, and being all snippy, I'm like, what is the big deal, honestly? So, I do remember not particularly loving Ro at the start of the episode, as she's a bit too prickly and stuff, but then warming to her a little, and then obviously loving her by the end of Next Gen, certainly. So, anyway, as I say, I have a couple of little facts that I think are relevant to the writing. Obviously, this was written by Rick Berman and Michael Piller, who would go on to create DS9, not surprisingly. Michael Piller felt the introduction of Ro was a success and said, it's one of the season's greatest accomplishments, not by just Rick and I, but the acting of Michelle, who's a wonderful performer. I would agree. You don't just throw in new people because this audience is really particular about who they're going to make part of the family, but I've heard almost no resistance to Ensign Ro. Me neither, but I know Lady Vian hates her, but she's not on this episode, so she can shush. Piller credited the success as due to the use of Guinan, as we've kind of already hinted at. He said, I think Guinan embraces Ro in a very personal way. She basically took Ro by the hand and said, she deserves your attention and deserves to be embraced by you. when she took Rota Picard for that very reason. In essence, she was doing that to our audience. It was not a very easy show to write. It wasn't until we found that relationship between Ro and Guinan that I was personally satisfied that we had really done something magnificent. Yeah, so I actually agree as well. And I think obviously that was what stuck with you, Rune. So it clearly did make an impact. And I think it is true, as you said, because we have such kind of respect and such affection for Picard that when Guinan's like, no, there's a guy I trusted, you can trust him as well. And he does, you know, he is the guy at the end of the episode that's like, stay with us, stay on board. Yeah. And you're not a great officer, but you could be. There's potential. You've got a lot to learn, which again, I also love because so many episodes wrap up with, oh, you're perfect, let's now just get you. So it's nice to know there's work to do and we'll continue doing it, but we're not fully there yet, but it's going to be an ongoing process, which is, again, I've said it millions of times, but the idea of like, oh, we're not just wrapping up our story in 45 minutes and we might actually be following a character almost like a serialized story. And Ro in particular, I remember every episode she was in was a little bit more development in that. As you've already said, like Rascals was a huge part of that, or like the next phase when she's with Geordi and thinks they've died, or, you know, right the way up to the episode where they lose their memories and her and Riker believe they're in a relationship, even though they hate each other and random bits like that. And then right to obviously what happens in Preemptive Strike, which we'll talk about in another week. But it's a weird one because, like, you didn't often get that with characters. It was always you need to understand them perfectly within 45 minutes or not at all. And she was an interesting one. I think it rewarded the viewer, which might be why I particularly like her. I don't know about you guys. Would you say the same? Or?
Yeah, I love seeing having an ongoing storyline like that. And the fact that she just kept coming back, like, even later was always exactly. Nice. Like, you always get a little bit more about her, a little bit more information, a little bit more development. It was great.
awesome. I have a couple of kind of related questions about the writing, and they're kind of, you know, tricky things to pass, but bear with us, we'll try. So first of all, I don't know if you guys were aware when you first saw this, you may have been as young as I was, at the whole point of the, you know, establishing the Cardassian occupation of Bajor and the various kind of real world metaphors that the Bajora could represent in this episode and things. Was that something you picked up on? Or it probably is by now, obviously. I wouldn't insult you by saying, oh, do you guys realize this? But, was it something you picked up at the time? And do you now kind of see the importance of it for what it is? And again, Jordan, I'll come to you first for that.
Yeah, I think it gave me, as a kid, it's hard to remember back that far, but I remember it giving me an understanding of oppressed people groups in a way that I could then like understand what was happening in the real world. So rather than like seeing it at the time and being like, oh, these people are representative of this group or that group or multiple groups, it was more like when I saw news or heard stories or read in my fifth grade history book or whatever about what was happening in different places of the world, or historical America, even.
True.
Just like, not that I was like, oh, these are just like the Bajorans, but it like had understanding what the Bajorans went through kind of primed my brain for having more empathy for and like understanding of what other people groups had gone through.
Yeah.
It was a very reading stories, seeing episodes, like fictional episodes, just like teaches you things.
Yes. Yeah. I've always said that sci-fi is kind of, it's a nice way to get these things. I think Gene Roddenberry used to say it's a way to get it over the censors' heads and talk about things that you would probably not get away with.
Yeah. And so like as a kid seeing that and being like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. And then like, seeing it actually happen in the real world too, when like obviously it was happening before TNG, but like I was so young that like I didn't know about those things, and then being like, oh my gosh, like this is horrible, like I can't believe that like this happens in the real world. So I don't know, it just gave me, it like taught me empathy, but like kind of in a way like primed the pump to have an understanding of it.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think it is interesting, and it's worth seeing. It's commendable that they do kind of go there with these things and show the atrocities committed to the Bajorans. That one horribly scarred guy, I mean, he's like, you know, the Cardassians were not just, you know, this isn't a political disagreement. They occupied, they tortured, you know, we hear about Ro's father being tortured to death in front of her and stuff, and it's very uncomfortable. So how did you feel about all of that, Rune? Did it hit you?
Yeah, I think I can't remember, like, I know I watched this stuff when I was really, really young, but as a teenager, when I was, like, really getting into it on my own, I remember watching it and being able to be like, oh, this species is representing this culture here in our timeline, mm-hmm. kind of a thing. And, like, being able to see that and really have that that empathy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sucks, and it's an uncomfortable thing to talk about, and it comes up all the time as I'm talking about Cardassians and Bajorans, which yeah. I hadn't intended, but it is interesting that, like you said, these are allegories for real things, and mm-hmm. it'll surprise people to learn after what I said about the Maquis episodes earlier that I kind of love that Starfleet aren't, you know, all-knowing and have all the answers, and that they get called out on this thing, because I like it, like you said, when things aren't black and white, as opposed to just you're the enemy, so
yeah,
it's interesting that their hands are very much tied, and it's difficult to see what they could do, but at the same time, I do also fully empathize with the Bajoran who's like, well, it must be nice to be able to turn a blind eye to suffering just because it's behind a line on a map.
Yep. Right. So. Yeah, like, oh, when he, oh gosh, what's his name? Keeve something. Keeve Valor.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, when he's talking about just like the phrase innocent bystander and how he like flips that on its head when he's talking mm-hmm. to Picard, just is so good. Like, it's just such good writing, and I just really loved that part.
Yeah, and I love that they explore that, as I said, without being black and white about these are bad, these are good, stuff are bad.
Yeah, not,
you know, I love that they're exploring that, and like exploring that the Prime Directive is not a perfect thing. I think I always appreciate when they do that, like, okay, it is the number one rule and everything, and there are reasons for that, but it also kind of is flawed, you know. There are limits to how effective it can be, and maybe we need to acknowledge that. If not, you know, in universe, then certainly as viewers, we should acknowledge that that is not a great idea, perhaps. So, yeah. Anything you wanted to add to that, Rune, before I move to the next question?
No, it's just, you know, also very unfortunately relevant today. So mm-hmm.
It is. It's horrible, but I do like that sci-fi allows us to explore these things.
Yeah,
and potentially, you know, get these ideas to people that wouldn't be receptive to them in other ways.
Yeah, I so appreciate that Star Trek in general has always been like very open and honest and didn't care who they offended because they were
exactly
sorry. Exactly. Yeah.
But Rune, it only just became woke in the last few years. It's what are you talking about?
Only just now woke.
God. It was never woke before. What are you on about?
No, never.
Just like the new Superman movie is woke. Right. Superman was never woke.
What do you mean he's an immigrant?
An alien immigrant who fights billionaires. What's woke about that?
Yeah. People are sometimes.
Yeah, some people really are blind, but hopefully it gets through to some people. Some people will always just be like, oh, it's woke, it's preachy or whatever, and you'll never reach them. But hopefully it would be nice if science fiction allegories, you know, touch people into realizing, oh, crap, this is what we're doing or some other people are doing that we're supporting or whatever else. And as in, I'm not going to spell it out for people, but it's there for you to see if you want to, you know, or if you're at least capable of it. Of basic empathy would be nice at times, but not obviously referring to anybody here. That's not my dig at you guys, but certainly, you know, anybody who's in politics probably could do with watching more science.
Exactly.
But anyway. The next question on a slightly lighter note and a more kind of in-universe note is, I've already given my opinions on this, but how did you guys react to the way that everybody kind of treats Ro? Like, it really feels unfair and very un-Star Trek to me.
It pissed me off.
Okay, Joel, not come to you first.
Yeah. It was understandable, like you said, Mike, but like...
Was it?
I mean, to a certain degree.
I don't know that we get enough of an explanation as to what she's supposed to have done to justify them acting like that, especially when you think of some of the things they've forgiven.
Hints about it, but we know she's in prison. We know she got court-martialed. We know that 8 of her crew died. So, like, it's understandable. It's very Michael Burnham-esque, actually.
Yeah.
It just feels such a double standard to me. Like, Wesley covers up the death of 5 people, and if you know,
I'm not saying there's not a double standard. I think there's a double standard, and Riker in particularly pisses me off. It all makes me mad.
There's an uncomfortable hint of misogyny in the way Riker does it, and I'm not sure if it's intentional or if it's the writing or the acting or what. And I don't mean to put that on Jonathan Frakes. I'm sure he's not intending it to be.
Oh, and I thought Jonathan Frakes acted his ass off. I thought he did a great job with that, and that's not. I feel like we don't see Riker be a jerk that often.
No.
And so I thought he did a really good job.
Yeah, but yeah, that's my point. They've forgiven so many other far worse things, and then all we get is the hint of, oh, I didn't do my duty and people died. And it's like, how many times has that happened to the Enterprise? I mean, Picard killed 11,000 people like last year. And you're like, no, well, it wasn't you. Never mind.
Right. I mean, yeah, with knowing she got court-martialed, like, we know that there's more to the story. So, like, in that sense, I understand. But I also, yeah, I think that, yeah, the whole thing, just everyone treating her like shit just pisses me off.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think it's,
yeah,
it just seems out of character, and it's not, it's the one bit of the script I don't like, because script wise it just feels they need you to get there, and I don't think it justifies it enough. And I think because it wouldn't be good justification, it's never explained. I mean, we don't know even to now, like, what did she do?
Yeah, and I think I am curious. I wish that they had given us like at least a couple sentences between Troy and Crusher. Because they seem to like reach out to her a little bit, but we don't know, like, even if it's just like a sentence of like, because I feel like there was more, they at least tried, where like Geordi and Riker didn't.
I'm probably going to get grief for that, but I think that's another thing that kind of makes me lean into, like, is there a really uncomfortable misogyny here? Like, the only two people that are willing to try, well, three people are the women. It's Troy, Crusher, and Guinan. And all the men are like, no, scumbag, doesn't deserve to be here. And I'm like, surely somebody in the scripting phase could have been like, it turns out coincidentally that all of the people that are the worst to her are men and all the nicest are women. Perhaps we should address this. No.
And yeah, I could see, I mean, I would have loved to see like Deanna and Beverly like disagreeing on how to treat her.
Yeah.
Because I could see that happening. Not that I think that like Beverly would be a jerk to her, but I feel like,
no.
Yeah, that they would have like, I could see them disagreeing on that. And that would have been like an interesting three sentences that you could have added. But
it makes even less sense when you think of it as Troy as well, though, because like she could read emotion. Like, if anybody's going to go over there and go, mind if I join you? No. Yeah, you actually want me to, because I can read your mind. So,
yeah. Yeah, but Troy values consent very highly. So if Ro says no, Ro says no.
I'm not saying that, but I mean, Guinan steps in and basically does exactly what Troy probably should have in the first place, which is, you're talking crap. You want somebody to join you.
Guinan's a little more rough about it than, like, she's like, meh. I'll be she also she has no Starfleet rules or etiquette to, like, apply to, except for her
own. Right, she's not the ship's official counselor. So.
I mean, but again, Troy's meant to be a trained psychologist. She couldn't crack the armor of the most basic, like, you
know what I mean?
But then again, she's never good at her job when the writers don't want her to be, I suppose. Anyway, but no, I mean, that again, that's just me. I know, because I don't like, it's very untrack. I can't imagine they would be that much of an ass to her, quite frankly. But yeah. So anything else you wanted to add about that? Sorry, I didn't get a chance to ask you, Runa. You were just basically agreeing, I think, with what we were saying.
No, I agree. Like, and there's a part of me knowing that, like, Star Trek is very much like a one episode and then it's a different storyline for the next week. Like, I can see writers being like, well, we have to really set up this bar, like this wall against Ro with all of our characters that love her, so that it can be like a dramatic arc for her to find out that she's really not all that awful. But yeah, it does hurt to see these characters that are usually so accepting and loving be assholes without really having a validation as to why that should be the case.
Exactly. You know? I was going to say, on the plus side, at least Data doesn't seem to have any animosity towards her. But then again, why would he? Without any emotion, it's kind of like, But I did like, at least he was respectfully like, well, what would you suggest? Who would you say that we talked to quite kindly? And I was like, would it have been so hard for everyone else to do that? You know what I mean? You're trained bloody military officers. Like, you're trained military officers. You should know how to at least talk with dignity to people, for crying out loud. You know?
Right.
But, anyway, such a random thing. People are like, oh, what a geek. It's not real. But anyway, so, and I do think part of it is that the kind of script in this episode wants really the kind of earning of like, oh, she did the right thing in the end, even though it wasn't her mission. So she's obviously a nice person, and it's kind of, it earns that all the more of, oh, people would be so surprised that this nasty person that did something horrible has done the right thing in the end. And
yeah,
that was going to be my next question. Like I said already, I appreciate the kind of, like I said, the surprise upon surprise, the reveal that, oh, I wasn't breaking orders. I'm doing different things for the Admiral, who in turn has probably been tasked by the Cardassians, who, you know, came to him because they want to get rid of the Bajoran problem. And it's kind of, it's wheels within wheels in that way. And I kind of love that it's fairly complex in a sense. At least it was as a kid first watching this, you know. So do you guys kind of like that kind of, I guess you would call it almost like a spy movie-esque kind of twist and turn nature of this particular episode at this, you know, these 45 minutes at least?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I enjoy the fun, like, yeah. Take me on an adventure.
Exactly. Yeah. But were you surprised by any of the reveals, or was that just me being really dense?
It's hard to... I mean, it's so hard because when I watched it also this morning, it's hard to like, cause I've seen it multiple times, you know? And so it was hard for me to like, I was like, oh, I remember this part. I remember that. That's not surprising to me, but I don't remember as a kid, like if I was, I'm sure I was surprised.
But, I swear I'm never surprised when there's a random admiral and they turn out to be a dick.
Right.
No, I mean, yeah, that was kind of.
Yeah, and I loved when Picard mentioned the Cardassian flu to him again. He's like, oh, how's the Cardassian flu there? Oh, yes. So funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, that surprised me because I thought at first I was like, oh, is this guy being racist? And he's like, oh, I bet it's germ warfare by those dirty Cardassians. And I was like, no, it's actually... it's the other way. It's the way of Picard Sherlock Holmesing, like, you met with the Cardassian, and that's where he gave you the virus.
Right.
And that's how you came up with this. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. You know? But, yeah. I do kind of love that they kind of touch on that as well, that there's, like, being Picard, he's the only man that could have found a way when they were like, well, you can't appease the Cardassians without sacrificing the Bajorans, so what are you going to do? And it's like, who can't? I'm Jean-Luc Picard, bitch.
Exactly.
So that was kind of all I really had to say about that. Like I said, I did like it. Said things can get complicated, and it dealt with that, trying to keep the kind of Cardassian peace, but doing a good job because it's Picard, and you know. But yeah, the only other question that I have written down on that is, Ro kind of says that she felt she had to take the mission when she was given it by the Admiral at first because she says it's better than prison. Then she kind of touches on it because she's trying to do something to help the Bajorans because she's ashamed of that part of her heritage because of watching her dad and you know, being ashamed of him being tortured to death and everything, and really dark stuff. But do you think she had to accept the mission from the Admiral? Or, I mean, I get it, certainly, but would it be something that you could relate to, or do you think she would have been better off in jail, maybe?
I think that if you look at it from like an actual human standpoint, like, you never know what kind of decisions you'd make under the worst circumstances.
Yeah.
And those were really bad circumstances for her. And maybe she saw an opportunity and then she got out there and met these people and was like,
Yeah. Because, I mean, she did. As I said, without touching too much on it, she does kind of do that. She meets people and goes like, oh, I find myself empathizing with you. Yeah. Damn.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very in line with her character. For sure.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. 100%. And I have to say as well, the other thing, that this is such a minor nitpick, but I do appreciate that she's kind of, she introduces us to this idea of like, oh, it's actually Ensign Ro because Bajoran custom has the surname first and everything. It's like, but so many Bajorans will just change it to assimilate, and I refuse to. And I'm like,
I've never met
any Bajoran who doesn't do that in the entire franchise. It's like, well, I'm one of the rare ones that will stick to it. And it's like, no, turns out they all just stick with it. But, again, they couldn't have known that when they were first writing this episode, I suppose. And it's nice to have that kind of touch of like, I've conflicted. I kind of hate my race and my backstory, but at the same time, I want to be proud of it and I want to represent it. And I do love that moment at the end when she's like, the condition is I'm wearing the bloody earrings.
Right. Yeah. No.
Yeah. That last act of defiance is really cool. So, yeah. Any last thoughts then on the writing before I move to the acting in the episode?
No.
Cool. The actors are self-explanatory, kind of who the biggest actors in this are. Obviously, you've got Patrick Stewart, Michelle Forbes, I would say are the two kind of main ones, and the kind of Enterprise crew, like we've mentioned, kind of have to act like jerks. Oh, and obviously Whoopi Goldberg, I should mention as well. So who was the standout for you guys? Whoever wants to jump in, and why, and what were the best moments do you think that really appealed? Go on, Rune, I'll let you start.
Oh, lovely.
I'll put you on the spot.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, Rose, like the best.
Yeah, Michelle Forbes, yeah.
Yeah, she's amazing. Whoopi Goldberg was probably my other one. Whoopi Goldberg and Patrick Stewart would be the other two really standout ones. I love the way Whoopi Goldberg portrays Guinan and that softness that she has, but also the, like, I'm not putting up with any bullshit.
Yes, exactly. Such a good character. For a character who only appears like here and there other than being a regular.
And it's always just great.
She always is. It's amazing. Yeah. And it goes to show that Whoopi Goldberg, you know, she's a movie level actress, you know. So yeah.
Which honestly is the best part of Generations. If you're gonna break down like her character and like really learning about her backstory finally, that's probably
Sure.
The peak part of Generations.
Yeah, I did appreciate them bringing her back in season two of Picard, even though I hate most of that season. I did love that at least Guinan got a chance to come back and kind of reunite with Picard as well.
Definitely.
But yeah, her Next Gen scenes are almost all, like any episode she's in and she gets a scene, whether it's like Measure of a Man, Best of Both Worlds, they're all just amazing, you know? And yes, I think it is the highlight of the episode showing... Thankfully, thank God, somebody remembers how to be a Star Trek character and like reach out and bridge that divide, you know? So I can understand that would be your kind of... I think I've written that my MVP was definitely Whoopi Goldberg for the acting and the way it's portrayed. So safe to say you probably would have agreed. What about you, Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, I had the same thoughts of Michelle Forbes was phenomenal. Whoopi was... probably my standout performance. And of course Patrick Stewart does a great job. So yeah, probably those are my top three as well.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't written much else. I've said that, like I said, Michelle Forbes I think is better than she gets credit for, because she makes you like her when she starts off as unlikable, and yet by the end you absolutely do, and she's justified it, and she gets, like I said, incredibly heavy stuff, which, you know, pierces your heart if you've got one, when she's talking about like what happened to her father and the way the Bajorans were treated. And, you know, it's heartbreaking, that scene in Picard's ready room when she's like literally laying her soul bare in front of him. I think that's incredibly difficult stuff to be given on your first episode as a kind of semi-regular, and she kind of knocks it out of the park. She's a great actress. Along with the kind of, like I said, the self-loathing, but also wanting to be proud of your heritage. And yeah, as I've said already, she's definitely a proto-Kira. You can fully see where they were going with that and where that character went. But yeah, obviously Patrick Stewart's great. Like I said, I didn't love most of the other characters acting like jerks, but I think that's more writing than acting. And I only have a couple of minor notes. First of all, I didn't get the actor's name, but the guy playing Mr. Mott, the barber, is so good, because we know we all know annoying people like that. And it's like, oh my God, yes, I've been there before. It's just good. Yeah. And the only other thing I have written, actually a couple of things. First of all, I completely forget the character's name, but you did mention it earlier, Jordan, the Bajoran. Keeve Fallor, that's it. I kind of love the way he kind of pierces through Starfleet, but you don't judge him or hate him for it. And he earns the justification of everything. And the very last note is the guy who plays Goldalak doesn't know his own species, because for some reason he pronounces it Cardassian. What?
I mean, that's very Trek as well.
Like, watch the episode they were in if you've been cast already. Jesus, you should know how to pronounce your race. But yeah, at least it is funny. It's pretty amusing. So, yeah. I'm guessing no more notes on the acting.
There weren't. It was very like heavy on just like three people. So
yes,
yeah.
But I mean, everybody got a chance. We've said it before in previous episodes, or I have with other guests, that at least everybody gets a chance to do something in the ensemble, all get a chance to represent rather than feeling like they're forced in, even if it was just Troy and Crusher reaching out and being rejected, because that's all they really did. I mean, they have a conference scene and whatever else, but they're not there to do a lot. And I can't remember Worf being in this episode basically at all. I know he is, but it's pretty much standard stuff. But anyway, But at least he doesn't get to be a jerk, because that would have perhaps been a bit too much. So in terms of direction, I've said this before many a time, but like TV directing, there isn't a whole lot you can usually pick up on, because the point is not to put too much of a stamp on and be noticed. But there's little things, like I noticed that the director of this is Les Landau. I love, during that scene I mentioned where Rose kind of, you know, bearing all to Picard and talking some really horrible things, Les Landau uses a really super slow zoom in on Ro. It's subtle, but it is noticeable enough that it really gives Michelle Pfeiffer's performance a chance to kind of pop. And he also does this thing that I noticed a lot of directors do when you're supposed to have a tense face off with somebody on the view screen, where they start off in like a long distance shot, and the next thing you know, they're immediately straight close up on their face and everything's dark behind them. And it's like, suddenly it's all imposing. I get it. I get what you're doing there. It looks nice and sinister. Like, ooh, we're about to have a fight. But I don't have any other notes. Did you guys have anything on the direction other than that?
No, not really.
No.
No, me neither.
Fair enough. So moving on then to the VFX, the production design. I have got a note that the look of the Bajorans in this episode is slightly different. You probably noticed. Over each eye, there's a subtle ridge. These were dropped later, and even Ro no longer has them by her final next-gen appearance in Preemptive Strike. They never bother explaining why or where they go, because...
like the Klingon ridges.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not. Don't even worry about it. I do have a kind of a really weirdly funny story about that. I don't know if you guys are aware of this, that when they were filming DS9, I know this from the Delta Flyers podcast, actually, they were filming DS9's first or second season, one of the two of them. And so they were in makeup and everything, and there was a fire somewhere nearby, so they all got evacuated from the Paramount lot. And so, yeah, they were all sent away, and whoever it was that was picking up the Nar Visitor, her driver, was like, oh, my God, we've got to get you to the hospital. What's happened to your nose? Oh, my God, look at the state. You've broken your nose or something. And she had to be like, it's the makeup. I'm an alien.
That is fantastic.
And I remember Armin Shimerman tells this story, and he's like, meanwhile, I'm speeding down the motorway dressed in full Ferengi garb, just getting the weirdest looks. Everybody's like, what the
fuck? Yes, I remember that story of him, like, after an earthquake hit or something, he was trying to get home to his family. But it
yes,
was
that might have
full
been it.
Ferengi.
I love it. The only other note I have, which again is supremely geeky, but I have to may as well chuck it in, that I watched this on the Next Gen Season 5 Blu-ray, and my word, it's gorgeous. They've really done a great job in improving the kind of color and the effect and everything for the Blu-ray release, so I can effectively plug that if anybody has the ability to watch Blu-rays and doesn't have the Season 5 Blu-rays like you. So yeah, other than that, the only thing I have on music and sound is that it's subtle, moody and effective. I can't really add much else. And that's it for all of my things. If you guys, did you have anything else on any of the subjects that we've talked about, any of the categories? Or
I don't.
No?
No, not really.
Awesome. Well, in that case, the next thing we have to do then is to open our subspace communications.
Incoming transmission.
This basically means that it's where I put out onto social media to ask everybody what their opinions are on this episode, their thoughts, their scores out of 5 stars if they want to give it, etc., as we're going to do. Didn't have a lot, but again, some people responded, mostly from Facebook groups, so I'll jump in and give you this. From Star Trek Family, John Robinette says, fantastic episode. Dave Polworth says, I loved Ro. She was everything a Starfleet officer isn't supposed to be, yet that was exactly what gave her a perspective the others lacked. Bobby Lynn said, I loved Ro. I thought she was a great addition and needed to be in more episodes. I'd love to visit the alternate reality where she was the lead in DS9. I love Kira, but it would be fascinating to see DS9 with Ro. Yeah, I think I've already said I agree with that.
Yeah,
she's in the novels.
I know, yeah. Isn't she on the Excalibur or something at one point in the New Frontier novels, or am I?
I haven't read the New Frontier novels, but I've read the like post DS9.
The relaunch stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and I love it. So I always have to plug those when I can.
Nice.
Fair enough. I don't blame you. That's cool. Yeah, same group. Star Trek Family. Teresa Marone says, I love Laren and I really love the way they brought her back in Picard. From my personal Facebook, Thomas Labanik, who was on just a few weeks ago. Hey, Tommy. Says, I enjoyed her introduction. I thought it added an interesting character with a chip on her shoulder. Back to Star Trek Family. Jennifer Nanek says, I didn't like her at first, but she's grown on me over the years. I think a few people would probably have said the same as that, to be honest. And finally, from our Instagram page, MemeSpace9, great name, said, it's interesting how her arrival causes hypocrisy. Riker chastised her for the earring, yet Worf can wear a sash with impunity. Yeah, I've already mentioned my issue with that and completely agree with you on that one. So, yeah, not a lot of feedback, but certainly nothing I would say negative. So before we jump into our conclusions and scores, I do like to go around and ask everybody's favorite character moment and line, not to put you guys on the spot yet again from the episode. So again, Jordan, you're used to this, so I'll come to you first. Do you have a favorite character moment and line?
Yes. I don't want to, it's such a short quote, but I don't want to mess it up.
Okay. All right.
So it's something like, oh shoot. I should have written down. My brain was like, I can remember this.
I can look it up for you if you want. I've got the transcript here if you tell me what it is.
It is. So Ro is talking to Picard about Bajorans, and she says, they're lost and defeated, but I will never be. I think that's just like really encapsulates her character so well.
I've got that exact exchange. Yeah, Picard says, you were helpful. Ro says, the blankets were helpful. Nothing I said mattered. Picard, in an age when their technology should be able to clothe and feed all of them, that they should laugh to live like this. Ro, I couldn't and I wouldn't. That's one reason I ran away. They're lost, defeated. I will never be.
Yes. Yep, that encapsulates her character so well, and I just love that exchange.
Yeah.
Awesome. And yeah, she's just so, like, I mean, I don't necessarily agree with her saying, like, they're lost and defeated, because I think it's more complex than that, but, like...
Oh, no, and I think she does that as well. I said, there's an inherent kind of push-pull with her Bajoran side in general.
Yeah, absolutely. But, yeah, that would be my standout quote of the episode.
Awesome. So what about character and moment? If you have them.
I think... There's so many good ones, but I think the one that stuck out to me was when Guinan said, like... something along the lines of like, I'm going to butcher this one too. She says something along the lines of like, you know, I was in a lot of trouble at one point too. And there was like one person that I trusted to get me out of it.
It's one man I trusted, and it was Picard. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that that's just so telling, like that just hints at such a rich backstory between them.
Yes.
That really pulled me in. To her character.
That scene is great when she basically takes Ro to Picard.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I mean, even to the point where what's she doing here? She's under, you know, she's assigned to quarters. She's my friend. Listen to her, you know.
Yeah, so, and even Picard saying like, Guinan doesn't call people friend lightly. Like, there's very
yes, exactly. Yeah,
about and so yeah, that character moment.
That's a great moment. And so, character, would it be Ro? Perhaps not to put words in your mouth.
Oh, my like standout character.
Yeah.
Yeah,
or Guinan, maybe.
It would be Ro, I think.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, same question to put you back on the spot as well. Rune, favorite character moment and line, if you have each of them.
My favorite line was the one where Guinan's like, she's a friend. I just love the weight of that and the pause afterwards. Favorite character moment, you said?
Well, moment or scene and then character, yeah.
Let's see. I think that my favorite scene is when right after the Cardassians blow up that Bajoran ship, and then he's talking to that admiral again, and he's like, yeah, nobody was on that boat. Nobody was there. We did that remotely. You're an asshole.
He basically, I love the way he doesn't say asshole, but the way he's like, maybe the Cardassians were just looking for somebody so naive.
Yeah.
And I was like, ow!
So great.
It really is. It just punctures the ego of the admiral just so
beautifully. Yes, like, and I love that deflation of...
That is kind of Picard equivalent of, you dumb shit.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And so, yeah, favorite character? I mean, there's a couple of standouts, obviously.
But... Yeah. Ro, obviously.
Fair enough. For favorite character, I went with Guinan. I said for the reasons that I've already mentioned, they're pretty obvious. My favorite moment was basically the same as you. I said, I like the various bluffs, but Picard's reveal that the Bajoran ship is unmanned was punch the air perfection for me.
Yes.
And my quote is, again, it's an exchange, and is exactly the one you already mentioned a few times, Jordan. It's between that Bajoran, whose name I cannot remember yet again, and Picard. So, and it's when he says, you are innocent bystanders, and I cannot condone violence against those who are not our enemies. Picard, then I don't understand why you're unwilling to help us. Because you're innocent bystanders. You were innocent bystanders for decades as the Cardassians took our homes, as they violated and tortured our people in the most hideous ways imaginable, as we were forced to flee. Picard. We were saddened by those events, but they occurred within the borders of the Cardassian Empire. Oh, and the Federation has pledged not to interfere with the internal affairs of others. How convenient that must be for you to turn a deaf ear to those who suffer behind a line on a map.
Yes.
I think that just pierces to the core of what the episode's kind of trying to say, really, doesn't it? So, yeah, awesome. Well, in that case, just have to give our conclusions then, and our scores out of 5 stars. Mine's kind of, as usual, quite pompous and written and semi-long, so I'll leave it till last. Jordan, did you want to go first with your conclusion and score out of 5 stars?
Yeah, I'm going to give this a 4 out of 5.
Okay.
I thought that it's a great introduction to Ensign Row. I mean, we've already kind of said all of this, but I love her character. I love the kind of the bluffing that happens with Picard's plan. It felt very Janeway to me. So shout out Janeway. and yeah, I think it's a very entertaining episode, no matter how many times I've seen it. Like we talked about at the beginning of the podcast, like it's applicable to today, unfortunately. It has been for a long time. So I love the like kind of modern day connections as well. I think it could spark good conversation. So I would say a very strong 4 out of 5.
Awesome. Nice. Rune, are you comfortable giving a conclusion and a score out of 5?
I'm terrible at scores, but I'll just give it a 5 because I really do enjoy this. And
Okay.
One of my favorite characters, like that isn't main cast. Yeah. And I love the backstory, like hearing, I like history anyway. So I like seeing all the way that they always like correlate this to like our actual history.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So like seeing the Bajorans and the Cardassian conflict and watching how Ro manages that and her whole that shame that she has, but then she's like, I have to fight for my people, and like I just love that. Her and Kira both the same way, just like that. Like I love that kind of just fuck it. I'll do what I think is right for this. So
yeah. Definitely a very admirable trait for a character. I couldn't agree more. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. So my conclusion, again, sorry for the pomposity of it. I just said, wow, this episode crams a heck of a lot into 45 minutes. On rewatch, what really stands out is how much it feels like a de facto DS9 pilot, as I said, especially if Ro had taken on the Kira role. We're introduced succinctly but effectively to the Bajorans, even if Bajora didn't stick. Their fraught history with the Cardassians, the annexation of their homeworld, and their shift towards what some would call terrorism in defense of a people ravaged by occupation. And that's just for starters. We also get a classic Badmiral plot, a thread of Starfleet honor versus political expediency, and significant character work for our titular ensign. It's a lot to juggle, and while not all of it lands as cleanly as it could, the ambition is undeniable. The biggest misstep is how uncharacteristically cold the Enterprise crew are towards Ro, especially without offering more context for the incident that supposedly justifies their hostility. It leaves a bitter note. The Federation's willingness to appease the Cardassians, despite clear atrocities, also goes largely unchallenged here, though that deeper moral reckoning is still to come. Michelle Forbes plays Ro as slightly too prickly at first, but she earns her place by the end and goes on to become a standout both in character and performance. And thanks to Guinan, we still get that quintessentially Star Trek touch of empathy and connection amid the political intrigue. Overall, it's a very strong episode, ambitious, rich in world building, and quietly foundational to what's coming. Not flawless, and some threads are left hanging, but it sets a tone and stakes out ideas that will echo long after. And I also give it a 4 out of 5. So I was in agreement with you, Jordan. And yeah, the funny thing is, putting that together, dividing it by 3 gives a score of 4.3 recurring for this episode, which obviously we'll just call that 4.3. And
round it up to 4.5.
Right? Make it even.
I said strong 4.
I would love to, but this would defeat my intense, funny sort of fact here, which is we've reviewed 4 episodes now, and 3 out of those 4 have ended up with a score of 4.3.
Fine.
The leaderboard not going to look particularly divided when it comes to the end of the season. So, and pity poor Voyager episode Maneuvers, which is currently the only episode not sitting on a 4.3. There we go. So yeah, it remains to be seen what we'll give the other Ro episodes, but I can't wait to discuss them. And with that, while Ensign Ro settles into her new Enterprise assignment, we're signing off this particular mission. It just remains for me to thank all of you listeners and remind you to stay tuned to our outro or check the link tree in the episode description for all the places you can find us throughout cyberspace. But mostly, thank you to my amazing guests. I've had a fantastic time discussing Trek with you both. Thank you both for coming on and giving great insights and thoughts and geeking out with me.
Thanks, Mike.
Jordan, I'll come to you first. Did you have anywhere that people can find you online or anything you wanted to plug?
Yeah, you can find me as Jordan LaFordan on Mastodon and AO3, like we mentioned earlier, for my Ash Tyler fanfic. There's more than just Ash Tyler there, but he's definitely the main character. I'm also on Blue Sky as either Jordan LaFordan or Jordan R. Hirsch. Either one of those you can find me.
Oh, you mean your last name isn't actually LaFordan?
No, it's not.
I knew it wasn't really what I wanted to believe.
I tried to find someone, and then I married my husband instead.
Oh.
Your name isn't funny, but okay, I love you.
That's right. I love to deal with it. You can always change your name. I'm just saying.
True. I'll see if he'll go for that.
Right.
Awesome. Cool. And Rune, what about you? Is there anything you wanted to plug or anywhere people can find you on the various internet places?
Nothing to plug, but you can find me on Blue Sky, Insta, and TikTok as at Rune, R-U-N-E, actor.
Rune actor.
Actor.
Perfect. Perfect. And that's great. As I said, I've had a really fantastic time, and I can't wait to hopefully talk to you guys again and discuss more Trek and more Ensign Row.
Yeah.
Row, generally. listeners, do stay tuned, because next week we're rerunning a previous podcast that we felt was relevant to the series theme. Myself, Rick Everson, looking at the DS9 feature-length premiere Emissary. Then the week after, we are back. We're reuniting last week's dream team of Vianne and John, and I'm hoping to get a word in edgewise as we keep the recording hopefully under 7 hours, and we review another deep Cardassian moral quandary. Our Delta Quadrant away team are diving into the Voyager episode Nothing Human. And again, do come back. We'll be back with more Rogue content and more hopefully from these two as well later in the season. So until then, keep a healthy distrust of anyone with more than 4 pips. Always tip your bartender. And remember, we are Starfleet. Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.
You have been listening to the Hit or Miss Star Trek podcast, part of the Hit or Miss Who Trek channel. Hit or Miss Star Trek is hosted by Mike Wilson and did, produced, and edited by Mike Wilson, based on an idea by Mike Wilson and Will Templar. Follow us on YouTube, your podcatcher of choice, and our social media. Links to all of these can be found by clicking on the link tree in the episode descriptions. This podcast is a Media Matters original production. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share this podcast throughout subspace. We'll be back for another thrilling trek through the stars soon, but for now, hailing frequencies closed.
Try to warp out of here at once, maximum speed.